Hey everybody, this is Erin, and I've got a question for you. What have you learned from writing excuses that you use in your own writing? Now, we talk a lot about tools, not rules, which means there are things that we're going to say that you're going to be like, yes, that is for me. That's the tool I'm going to use in my next project. And there are others that you're going to be like, I'm going to leave that to the side. And what we want to know is which of the things that we're saying have really worked for you. What's the acronym you're always repeating? What's the plot structure you keep coming back to? What's a piece of advice that has carried you forward when you've been stuck in your work or that you've been able to pass on to another writer who's needed advice or help? However you've used something that you've learned from us, we want to know about it and we want to share it with the broader community. Every month, we're going to put one of your tips or tricks or tools in the newsletter so that the rest of the community can hear how have you actually taken something that we've talked about and made it work for you. And I'm personally just really excited to learn about these because a lot of times y'all take the things that we say and use them in such ingenious and interesting ways to do such amazing writing that I'm just like chomping at the bit to get in these tools and tips and share them with everybody else. So if you're interested, please go to our show notes and fill out the form there and be part of this project and just share with us what you're doing, what you've learned, and how you're using it so that we can share with everybody else. Really excited again to get all this in because honestly, what we say is made real and important and meaningful by what y'all do with it. With that, you are out of excuses. Now go tell us what works for you.
Cozy traditions feel good, especially this time of year. And that includes changing up your makeup look for fall. From lashes for days with the viral liquid lash extension mascara to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener. Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Whether you want a simple, just gotta get out the door routine or fall glam that wows from the office to all your favorite fall festivities, you'll always look and feel radiant with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Complete your fall look. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CauseMetics.com/cozy.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 44. This is Writing Excuses.
Now go write. How to handle relationships.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
And I'm Erin.
And we have an exciting announcement. Writing Excuses is going to be publishing a book. It's called Now Go Write. It is all of us talking about the things that we have been talking about on the podcast for the past 20 seasons, but in a handy paper formula. Formula? Sure, that's
format.
Format. Formulation.
Formula format.
So that you don't have to listen to us doing things like that, because the book will be copy edited, unlike the podcast. So to give you a teaser of that, we are each going to be sharing with you one of the topics that we have written a chapter for the book. We're going to start with me, and I'm going to be talking about how to handle relationships. So this is based on this whole conversation that I had with my mother-in-law, honestly. But one of the things that you see repeatedly in all sorts of media are relationships that are built around the characters like fighting with each other. The whole will they, won't they, where they have a good relationship and then they have to break up for plot reasons. It's deeply annoying. But once you have characters, they have to interact with each other, whether it's a romantic relationship or friend relationship. So This is some tools to look at how to make that believable and also a source of momentum. So I mentioned my mother-in-law. She has this thing that I call the COWL relationship axis, which is dating advice that she gave to my husband. He modified it and I modified it a little bit more. The theory is relationships exist on multiple axes. And the more closely aligned you are on these axes, the more you'll get along. So these axes are mind, money, morals, manners, monogamy, and mirth. Don't worry. Those are going to go in the liner notes. And also there's a handy chart that will be in the book. But mind is both people have the same level of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Money, they have similar attitudes about money. Morals, the same kind of sense of right and wrong. Manners, the same idea of what is polite. This is also, by the way, sometimes you know people who are assholes online, but you meet them in person and they seem charming because their manners are aligned with yours while their morals are deeply messed up. Monogamy is not actually, my husband just needed them to be all M's. The original one was hot burn and kisses from my mother-in-law. There you go. The idea is basically that you have the same idea of what the relationship is.
Right.
You know, like you've met someone and they think you are BFFs and you're like, we have met at the water cooler and it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then mirth, you find the same things funny. So now any of those axes where you are out of alignment is going to be where your source of conflict is. So, for instance, my husband and I closely aligned on all of those, but we're a little bit out of alignment on money. We both agree about what money is for, but in the Aesop's fable, I am the grasshopper, he is the ant. Mm-hmm. And then the other place we're a little bit out of alignment is manners, because he is from Hawaii and I am from Tennessee. Those are not the same.
Just a little different.
Just a tiny bit different. So if we have outside pressure pushing on us, those are the places where our conflicts will show. Mm-hmm. So when you're creating characters that you want to get along, you try to keep them as closely aligned as possible. Mm-hmm. And when you want them to disagree, like to be in wild conflict, then you can move those things wildly out of alignment. So those are the COWL relationship axes. I have two other tools that I want to toss at people. But I thought we would talk about these before we move on to the others.
It's impossible to not start immediately mapping every person in my life onto this grid of like all of my friends, my, you know, partner, my like relationship to other family members. I'm like, oh, where are we aligned? Where's the misalignment coming in? You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I was like, and next, writing excuses, we'll create a dating app where you can align yourself and it'll be called Now Go Date. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
But it did make me think like where you might pull out of alignment could also be an interesting like thematic thing with the story. Like you could say like on this story, I really want everyone to have really different morals, but aligned on manners to talk about like. You know, that's an observation I want to make about society, or I really want to have a money thing because I want to explore how capitalism affects the way that our relationships are.
Right. Yeah.
And so that could be really fun.
Well, one thing that's always striking is how much like Regency era romance are much more about money than contemporary romance, where it would be almost like inappropriate to make it about that in a certain way. But like, you know, what someone's income is so important in that era for like women trying to find, you know, their romantic match.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, and it was considered, like, kind of understandable if you prioritize money.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, he didn't marry me because he found this woman worth 10,000 pounds a year. And everyone's like, well, I mean, gotta do what you gotta do. Yeah. You know, like, people.
And the scandal is picking the monogamy match, you know.
Yeah.
Or the morals and mind match over the money match, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you can see that in, like, Jane Eyre and things like that. And it makes those so rich and responsive to the thematic elements of those books.
Yeah. And one of the other things that's interesting also is that these are all the starting states. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, people's things stay more or less aligned, but there are things that you can push out of alignment over the course of a story. So like when someone comes into a big inheritance, or if someone is in an accident and they have some brain damage, sometimes people don't respond well to that. Mm-hmm. If someone has a moral awakening and they're like, if they become woke, and they realize, oh, I am now out of alignment with people that I thought were my friends, but I can't. I think some of us have had that reaction to some books. So these are things that you can push around also during the course of the book to introduce tension, even if you don't start there. And you can also bring them more closely in alignment where someone is like, oh, I was wrong about a thing.
Yeah. Or just change the lens, like mm-hmm. where you're putting your attention, where, you know, when you first meet somebody, maybe you're not thinking about, you know, morals as much. Yeah. You're focused on, you know, the chemistry there. You're focused on, oh, we like find the same things funny. And then, you know, 3 months into the relationship, you're like, oh no, we think about, you know, how we should treat other people very differently. Yeah. And I think, you know, like you were saying about how manners can cover up a difference in moral or mind in interesting ways.
Yeah. And going back to Jane Austen with Darcy and Lizzie, they are actually really closely aligned. They are not as far off. She thinks they're significantly farther off on morals. Like morals, they're actually pretty aligned. Family mm-hmm. is the most important thing. They are out of alignment in terms of manners, because her family is a lot. Mm-hmm. but that's also where the conflict is between them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because she also thinks that he has bad manners mm-hmm. in the less like social class way and the more like you just rude kind of way. You know what I mean? So it's interesting because in fact, her family is like the do you invite them to the party family? But meanwhile, she spends a lot of the book sort of judging his manners within a mannered world.
Exactly. Yeah. There's an interesting idea in the Regency that that manners are an outward expression of our opinion of others, which is different than etiquette, which is formal codified rules. And so there's a line somewhere in there about how he has manners that are not calculated to please.
Interesting.
And I'm like, he did not want to. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to introduce you to a couple of other things. I'm going to introduce you to aspects of self and then how to apply these, because this tells you how to create conflicts, but it doesn't tell you how to use them.
Pre-roll, gusto, ad copy, take one. Speaking as a small business owner, I don't think anyone starts a business for the joy of calculating tax withholdings. That's where Gusto comes in, to take the stress out of payroll, benefits, and HR so you can focus on why you started your business in the first place. Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use, so you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Automatic payroll tax filings, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k, you name it, Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. Get direct access to certified HR experts to help you through the toughest HR situations. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/WX and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/WX.
The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or at least made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard football fans to foodies and mixologists and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/WX. That's uncommongoods.com/WX for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Welcome back from the break. This is one of my favorite topics, honestly. So I'm really glad that I got to do a whole chapter for it. Okay, so aspects of self. One of the things that you can do when you are looking at a relationship in a book and how to handle it is to treat the relationship like a character. So the relationship itself is a character, which means that that relationship can go on a character arc. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that you're going to do if you want the character of the relationship to change. Enemies to lovers, that kind of thing. It is also a thing that you can think about if you do not want the relationship to change, if you want it to be stable. So if you've got, if we think of it as a character, I think that there are four things that, four aspects of self-definition for people, not talking about like the outward things, but how we self-define. Ability, role, relationship, and status. So ability is defined by areas of competence, things you can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. Role is defined by responsibilities, tasks. Relationship is defined by loyalty, and status is defined by power, basically. So the idea is that let's say that we have a heist team. We're doing an ensemble.
Nice.
I love heists. We've got an ensemble.
We're stealing the eighth gem of Ruhisla.
Yes. Yes, we have to have the eighth gem of Ruhisla and the extra exclamation points and apostrophes that
exactly.
go with that. So the team is fully committed to each other. They are absolutely, like, we are a team. But one of them identifies as ability. They're like, we are a group of thieves because we steal things. I have the ability to crack safes. You have the ability to climb walls. You have the ability to impersonate anybody. We have these abilities. This is how we work. We've got these abilities. And someone else is like, no, we're a team because we're thieves. That is what we do. We steal mm-hmm. things. If we didn't have those abilities, then we would find other ways to steal things. And someone else is like, no, guys, it's not that. It's about our relationship. We're a family. If we couldn't steal things, we would like open a pizza joint. I love mm-hmm. you so much. And the last one is like, no, we steal things because that gives us money and money gives us power. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do this. And we are a team because we are all the best at that. So they're all fully committed to each other. But if there is friction about whether or not to go in with the heist, that is the place where one person might pop out a little bit from mm-hmm. the team. And then you can go back and look at how those arguments manifest by looking at the relationship axes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm thinking about ways in which each person might, like, nope out. So, mm-hmm. like, if you're like, it turns out the gem is actually worthless, it's really hard to steal. Like, it actually requires a lot of ability, but we can't sell it for anything. It's just like, we're doing it for the fun.
Yeah.
The person mm-hmm. who's into status is like, well, if it's not worth anything, like, why would we go through all this, like, mm-hmm. trouble mm-hmm. to do it, you know? Or if somebody's like, oh, I can't, it's a safe that I would have trouble cracking, the ability person might say no. Whereas somebody who believes in the role as thieves would say, we still got to try. Like, we're thieves. We're going to try to find another way around it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really cool to, like, look at how they might each drop out of the heist.
Well, you can use that to sort of highlight the thematics of the story mm-hmm. you're telling, right? Like, I'm thinking about the second arc of the first season of Andor, the Aldani heist. You know, that entire squad, each of the members of that team have different reasons for being there. Some, mm-hmm. you know, Vel is there for relationships, Cinta's there for ability, you know, Nemec is there for status because it's all about the cause for him, right?
Yeah.
And the entire arc of the first season of Andor is Andor moving from one role to another role mm-hmm. in that breakdown. And so by highlighting the difference between them, you can use that contrast to really emphasize the thematic points you're trying to create.
Exactly. That's a great example. And it also, I'm glad you said moves from one role to another, because that's also a stress point for an individual and for a relationship.
Yeah. Mm.
So if they have a sudden status drop or someone has to shift roles, if they had to add someone to the team and then figure out how they fit in, like all of those things can cause stress. And it's very grounded stress. It's not the like, oh, I don't like the way you make coffee. Puh, I'm out of here. You know, sometimes people just like make up weird things. You don't pronounce Rohisla with enough emphasis.
With enough hissing.
Yeah.
I know.
And, you know, not to spoil it or not to, you know, over-index on Andor, but like the final turn in that arc is a moment where one character says to him, you're just like me. And he's right. And he looks at what that means and he can't bear it. That's what shifts his status, is him seeing that, you know, the relationship, our moral is the same. And then him looking at that and being like, I don't want that to be true anymore. Mm-hmm. And then that is what kicks him off on his hero's journey from there. It's just like incredible moment right at the end of that. So,
oh my God, how Javert of him, my favorite, like, person who in realizing they are the same as the hero is just like, nah.
Yeah.
I can literally not live with myself understanding that, like, we actually are the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
That's the kindest reading of Javert I've heard in a long time.
Javert, he's just like us. No, he's not.
No, he's not. He's definitionally not.
I'm just kind of waiting for a chorus to burst through. So the other thing that you can play with is the tools of a healthy relationship. Communication, compromise, and commitment. An unhealthy relationship lacks those things. Mm-hmm. And this is why the plot line of that results in readers going, if they would just talk to each other, is so annoying, because you know that this is an unhealthy relationship and it's just continuing to be an unhealthy relationship. So I find that often I can get more tension out of letting my characters talk to each other and having it be an uncomfortable conversation than I can by them not talking to each other. Because just like in the real world, all you're doing is you're avoiding discomfort, and discomfort is where the tension is. And the other is just like, eh.
I mean, this is a case where you can see the ways in which modeling realism mm-hmm. becomes more frustrating as a narrative experience, right? Because in reality, we know all of our friends who aren't talking to their spouses about the thing that's a huge problem in their relationship and won't do that for whatever reason. I'm not calling anyone out in particular, I swear to God. But,
no,
you know.
No, I'm thinking of like every Am I the Asshole post ever. Right. Like, maybe just ask him. Maybe,
it's like most advice columns just boil down to, I don't know, why didn't you talk about it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, this is a pattern that we see in real life every day. And yet, whenever we encounter it in fiction, it's immediately infuriating when it's just like, just talk to them and figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the same way that it's infuriating in my own life when I'm just like, please talk to them.
Yeah.
I'm begging you. But, you know, fiction is heightened in that way, mm-hmm. right? We want to explore the discomfort. And so I think just letting it be the real thing, the realistic thing, is a weird trap in this case.
Yeah. And I think it is also one of those things where you can, you know, you can split the difference. They don't have to immediately say, I feel like we have a conflict. Let's discuss mm-hmm. it. But there comes a point where it is, you've pushed it so far. And I think the thing you said about how it's frustrating when your friends don't talk to each other, mm-hmm. that's the thing, is that the reader kind of becomes a friend.
Yeah.
To the characters in the book, or at least a stalker, you know, and they really want the characters to
do. Stalkers think they're your friend too.
Yeah,
so.
Yes.
Yeah. Oof. I really like the what I call the forks and spoons conversation, which is where like you're arguing over the dinner placement, but it's really about like your feeling about your mother-in-law, not yours, but anyone's. Because I think in that case, they are communicating. They're just not doing it. They're not able to live in the discomfort. And so they're doing it like sideways.
Yeah.
You see this a lot, really well done in theater. Mm-hmm, and it's like, okay, the audience can read what's going on. And eventually sometimes there's a breakthrough where it breaks from, we're talking about the fork, to like, wait, are we really talking about Jimmy in school? And that's such a great moment, because you as an audience member also get to feel clever. You understand what they were talking about before they did. And then when they finally realize it, you're like, I knew that's what it was really about. And it gives you that feeling of like, I am as smart as the people in the story that I think we often enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an incredible moment in the film Hereditary, which I doubt either of you have seen. But to me, the scariest moment in the film is the thing where nothing supernatural is happening. They're having a conversation on a dinner table, and one character begins to complain about something, and Toni Collette, who plays the mom, freaks out and starts screaming at them about, like, I'm your mother. It's this incredible moment. It's an incredible speech. And the catharsis is finally saying out loud all the sublimated things that have been happening throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen those forks and spoons conversations for what feels like an eternity at that point. And so the dam breaking is this incredible moment of catharsis. But you're right, it has to reinforce my understanding of what's happening here. And because it does, it becomes this beautiful, clarifying moment that's also deeply harrowing and traumatizing.
Oh, I love that. I may see if I can work that into the essay. So the kind of last tool that I want to talk to you about is how to handle these in sort of an arc. So I've already talked about you can treat it like a character arc. So the relationship is undergoing change. Mm-hmm. This is what you have with a meet cute, where they are trying to decide, you know, sort of who they are. And is this a, it's also this sort of thing you see with breakups as well. Mm-hmm. You can also apply this in using Mice Quotient. You can apply it in a couple of other ways. You can treat the relationship like a milieu. The story begins when the character enters a relationship and it ends when they exit it. Mm. And you are, the whole thing is then about exploring or navigating a relationship. You could treat it like an inquiry stories, which means that there are questions about the relationship. This is one of those things with uneven power dynamics. Why is this, you know, tall, dark stranger so brooding? Mm-hmm. You know, like those can be things. You can also think about it in inquiry, like divorce stories. If you think of the relationship like a dead body, how did it die?
The cold open is finding yes. The divorce.
and then event stories. Event stories can be things like one of the examples that I think of is actually Inigo Montoya's relationship mm-hmm. with the six-fingered man. That's this big, powerful thing where he's mm-hmm. trying to change the status quo. His father was killed. He wants revenge. He wants to change the status quo. So even though they are not, they aren't on screen most of the time together, his role, his performance in that film is very much defined by his relationship yeah. with this character and the fact that he wants to kill him. So you can do all sorts of fun things like that. And then, you know, always kind of you have those other tools that you can play with to sort of create nuance yeah. through it.
I'm also wondering, like, an event, because the event story is like where the thing is coming, the meteor is landing mm-hmm. on Earth, like stories where it's like, it'll all be fixed when on my birthday, like in a relationship yeah. that yeah. is like not going well. And everyone like, it's like when this event happens, it will definitely be the thing that like changes everything in a good way. Or like yeah. when your mom arrives, like, and so it becomes this like impending event mm-hmm. that, you know, in some ways it's about the event, but in some ways it's just about all the things that the lead up to that event
yeah.
like reveal yeah. about the characters and their mm-hmm. relationship with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
What I really love about thinking about it this way is usually when we talk about something that's not a character being a character, we mean like settings, like, mm-hmm. oh, New York City was like a character in this yeah. movie or whatever it is, right? I love this image of the relationship being a character, because then the stakes are, does the relationship survive, mm-hmm. right? Does it live or die? And seeing it as this thing that operates and moves and shifts, and it's kind of its own thing throughout the story, I think is a really useful framework for thinking about pacing and stakes and, you know, all the different aspects of a story in a way that I think is really rich and wonderful.
I am so glad that you both like that. Hey, this is Time Travel, Mary Robinette. I am cutting back into the episode to say that when we finished recording this, we decided that model was a better word than monogamy, but we aren't going to re-record the whole episode. It'll just be right when you get the book. So when you tell people about it, mind, money, morals, manners, model, and mirth. And now, past Mary Robinette's going to give you your homework. So I'm going to move us over to our homework, and I'm again going to refer to my mother-in-law. So one of the things she said was to my husband when he was trying to, you know, talk to her about, like, how do you know? And she said, you know it's the right person when you love them because of their flaws. So what I want you to do is I want you to look at your story and see who your main character loves because of their flaws. And just write a little exploration scene where the character is exhibiting those flaws and the other character is watching that fondly. And then write a different scene where they're mad at them and the flaws are pissing them off. So now that you've got that homework, there's one other piece of homework that I have, and you're going to get this homework again. If you want to find out when this book is coming out, you need to head over to the website and you need to sign up for the newsletter, because that is when we're going to let people know when the book is coming out. And when you sign up, there is also a little bonus thing that you get. So head to writingexcuses.com, sign up for the newsletter, and now you're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Don Juan Song, and Aaron Roberts. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.